for every no I get, it's like another sort of like added fuel in me to be like, your loss. Yeah. So it also fuels my engine a little bit, and channel that energy into something that will have a better impact for you.
Hi there, thanks for joining us. Today on the 2%, I'm excited to share a conversation with Baba Rivera, CEO and founder of Ceremonia, the clean hair brand rooted in Latinx heritage. When we first met Baba in 2020, Ceremonia was pre-launch, and we were so impressed with Baba's vision, we decided to make an early scout investment. Post-launch, Ceremonia saw incredibly exciting traction, and earlier this summer, we were thrilled to reinvest and officially welcome Ceremonia into Female Founders Fund as a portfolio company. This fall, Ceremonia made history by becoming Sephora's first ever Latina-owned hair brand, marking a huge milestone for not only the brand, but the Latinx community as a whole. And as Baba says best, this is only the beginning. So let's get started. Baba, it's so great to have you on here today. So you are the founder of Ceremonia, a clean hair care brand rooted in Latinx heritage. Would love to maybe just start off with what inspired you to start this company, and you know, what was kind of your background before that?
Yeah. So I'm kind of like an unconventional beauty founder in the sense that I did not build my career in the beauty industry. I come from tech, and I was part of launching Uber in the early days. I was actually, my role at Uber initially was to launch the service in Sweden. And then that brought me eventually to the US, where I headed up fashion partnerships. And yeah, so I did not build my career in the beauty industry. However, I come from a family that is beauty obsessed. my dad was a hairdresser back in Chile. And when he immigrated to Sweden, he was actually never able to get a job in the field because of the language barrier. So he ended up just practicing his passion for hair on me and any family members that would sort of let him play with their head. But yeah, so in terms of what inspired me to eventually start Ceremonia, I think there was definitely this, you know, passion for beauty from within that was sort of like almost like in my bones for just based on how I grew up. But more importantly, it was actually coming from a place of almost like finding my way back to my own roots. I am a Latina woman who grew up in a homogenous country called Sweden. And as a result, I never really saw myself represented anywhere, like not even just in beauty, like not even the business world. Like I never opened a magazine and read about an awesome Latina building a billion-dollar business, you know, like that just didn't happen for me. And what happened was that I started to feel like my Latin heritage was a disadvantage. So I started assimilating a lot, and I shaved off many parts of my culture through my sort of teenage years and into early adulthood. And a couple of years ago, I started reflecting on that and the realization that representation matters so much, mixed with this sort of like desire to use the privilege that I have today to drive the change that I wish I would have had growing up, led me on this, you know, very strong mission to seek out a venture that would have Latinx at its core. Mm-hmm. So even before I knew it was going to be hair or beauty, I just knew it was going to be something that it had to do with empowering and celebrating the richness of the Latin culture.
Amazing. I love that. You know, you mentioned this a little bit, but how do you think your upbringing in Sweden, which, you know, is somewhat unusual, as you mentioned, you know, having a Chilean background, how do you think that influenced your interests and then ultimately, you know, your entrepreneurial mindset?
Yeah, I reflect on this a lot because I'm sort of like the odd one in my family. I'm the only one who, you know, finished education. I'm the only one who Yeah, I mean, it's like I'm the first on so many levels. But I do think that growing up with immigrant parents who could never help me with anything really taught me from an early age to be a problem solver. And it also instilled an immense sense of confidence in me, because all my friends were relying on their parents to drive them to activities, or they were relying on their parents to motivate them to sign up for sports or whatever. And I just motivated myself, and I would find a bus connection and take the bus and or take the bike myself. So I do think that that sort of like, in a way, lack of support. And I don't mean this in a negative way. It was truly more so lack of practical support. There was an endless amount of emotional support at home, but they didn't have a driver's license. They didn't speak the language. They didn't know how to help me with my school assignments or how to sign me up for sports. So I had to do that myself. And I think that has really instilled a key ingredient that goes into entrepreneurship, which is confidence.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And resilience.
Yeah, for sure. That's honestly such a good point.
So you touched on this, you know, prior to starting Ceremonia, you were involved with launching Uber in Sweden, and then came to the US, worked in brand marketing at Away, and then ultimately launched, you know, your own brand marketing agency. I'm just curious, you know, what are some of the takeaways that these experiences contributed to kind of the Ceremonia journey?
Yeah, I mean, I'm so grateful for these experiences. I would say particularly my experience at Uber, because they really molded me from an early age to have a growth mindset. Mm-hmm. Uber was all about kind of like having entrepreneurs within the company. So I really became an entrepreneur, I think, at Uber, first and foremost. I had really aggressive goals, no sort of like micromanagement whatsoever, for better or worse, and had to just figure a lot of things out on my own. And one mantra that I still live by, that I think was like, I don't know if it was official or unofficially a cultural value at Uber, but it's something that I definitely live by today, was this idea of being an owner and not a renter. And I thought that was so powerful, because if you show up at work like an owner versus like a renter, you just show up in a very different way. If you're renting an apartment, you're like, I'm anyway going to move out of here a year from now, you know, but if you own it, you're going to treasure it in a different way. So I definitely, you know, built my career with that perspective, that I show up as if I'm the owner. And the other one is that things are better done than perfect, which is so powerful in a startup environment, because we don't have time for perfection. You really need to find that perfect balance between 90% done, that, you know, like leaving out those 10% will still get you like, you know, close to the same results. But the last 10% are sometimes, you know, what takes the most of your energy and time to complete, and you never achieve 100% perfection. So yeah, I would say those are the main takeaways.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to that point, the 10% often is what holds people back.
Yeah.
And being able to take that mindset, you know, I think is so powerful from an execution standpoint. So really, really helpful advice. So, you know, moving on to hair care, you know, you mentioned you had an interest growing up and wanted to kind of meld your Latinx heritage. But I'm just curious, you know, moving into a new industry, where did you see the opportunity to kind of disrupt and, you know, build a new brand in the space?
Yeah. So I think another thing that I actually learned from Uber was that a lot of the times the greatest innovators are not the ones from the industry. And that's maybe an unpopular opinion, because people take a lot of pride in, you know, being an expert. I've been in this industry for 20 years. But the reality is sometimes that expertise holds you back. And I experienced that firsthand, because before going into the startup industry, I had a career in the eyewear business, and I was schooled in the sort of like old school way, you know, with the prestigious eyewear houses, and everyone thought I would go and build my own eyewear brand one day. And I remember realizing that I could never innovate in the eyewear industry because I had so much pride in how I learned to do things by the previous generation. Yeah. So it was hard for me to look at that industry with fresh perspective. And Uber proved that even more for me. Like Travis always said, Uber was not founded by the taxi association for a reason. So I think that also instilled a little bit of, you know, this confidence in me that just because I don't come from a certain industry doesn't mean that that door is closed. Actually, it's almost an invitation because I can bring a different perspective. And when it comes to hair, it's so fascinating because the beauty industry as a whole is in a paradigm shift. Consumers are demanding very different needs from companies. They are demanding transparency, sustainability, environmental responsibility. And that's where clean beauty, you know, has been taking off so much. And it's become sort of like the answer to the new generation's demands.
Yeah.
When it comes to hair, however, that category has been so stagnant, and it's a category that's very far behind the rest of the beauty industry. And it's been dominated by sort of like a styling approach. It's been dominated by celebrity hairstylists, you know, who are awesome at doing red carpet looks. And somehow they are then launching their own brands for a regular Karen at home. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. And then it's either that or big box beauty that will pay for a celebrity to front their campaign. And all of these, like all of these products, what they have in common is that they are telling people to mask their hair for the day. It's sort of like a styling approach. And that's the equivalent of thinking about skincare with makeup. Like, you wouldn't wash your face with foundation, you know? So like, I was looking at the industry with a fresh perspective and just asked myself, wait, where is the care aspect of hair care? Where is the hair wellness category? And especially in today's, you know, day and age where everyone is so health and wellness conscious, what about hair wellness? So that mixed with the second realization, which was that my demographic, the Hispanic demographic in the United States, are actually the biggest spenders in hair. We spend 46% more on hair care products than non-Hispanics. Yet, where are the brands that are authentically, you know, speaking to us and representing us? And more importantly, like from sort of like a, you know, equality standpoint, where are the brands that are founded by us? Like, where is our seat at the table at this billion-dollar industry? So yeah, I think with all those data points, I just felt this insane urge to jump in and drive change.
Yeah. And I know, you know, you and I have obviously talked about this, but actually in a lot of ethnic communities like Indian, Latin, there's been really like an age old tradition of, you know, whether it's hair oils or hair treatments, which, you know, for whatever reason hasn't really translated into the Western model of hair care, you know.
Yeah. So, and I think actually there, like at least for me, I was ashamed of a lot of the rituals that I grew up with because they were different and I didn't want to be different. Mm-hmm. And I think now we're hitting a time in culture where women of color are starting to embrace their heritages more. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where, you know, this new age of brands that are popping up, like I love Tinted, the makeup brand also founded by an Indian woman. And she really, you know, hones into Indian rituals and traditions into the brand, and Ceremonia doing the same with Latin rituals. I think this is the time to really own that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So, you know, launching a brand, you know, we all know is challenging, and you add a pandemic to the equation, and, you know, for better or worse, you kind of have to figure it out. And so I'm just curious, you know, for you, what were those early days like? How did you deal with, you know, kind of the, you know, building the brand, but also, you know, doing it in a way that may not necessarily have been what you initially expected.
Yeah, man, it's, and also I was highly pregnant. And that was with my first child. So I had no idea what I was getting myself into. So talk about going into the unknown. I think the pandemic was, you know, super stressful for us, but in retrospect, also such a gift because it really instilled so much resilience in the team. And we became really great at working digitally, you know, whereas a lot of companies were struggling to, you know, go from this ERL environment to then try to translate that to a digital culture. We were able to adopt to that from day one. And I think everyone in my team learned, even if that was not something that they had in them before, they'd learned during this time that the only constant is change.
Yes.
And that's a very powerful powerful learning. So yeah, we definitely navigated everything with like a sense of open mind. We had our sort of like ideal scenario, like, okay, if, you know, restrictions lift, then we will go to Nicaragua and shoot this campaign. Okay, restrictions, if they don't lift, we'll keep it within the US, we'll go to Miami. And then turns out Miami had a peak of cases. So we're like, okay, we're shooting it upstate New York, you know, and like you just adapt. And instead of pushing launch or sitting here with a, you know, victim corner, we just, you know, kept going. And we're like, okay, well, it's not what we thought, but we'll get that campaign at a different time. And also, we're a sustainable brand. What is more sustainable than shooting it locally? Like, there's a story there. So we just try to always find the silver lining.
I love that. So I know, you know, Ceremony, originally launched with a hair oil. You have expanded to, you know, other fabulous products, scrubs, masks, et cetera. How have you thought about the product roadmap? What has really influenced, you know, the direction in which you think about product development?
Yeah. So we actually thought a lot about this even pre-launch, where something that I thought was interesting in the whole direct-to-consumer space is that there are a lot of the times these brands that, you know, work for many years before even seeing the day of light.
Yeah.
And then they spend all this capital on what they think is going to be a great market fit. And then they launch with a full routine.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone is like, who are you guys? Like, why would I switch out my entire routine for this brand that came out 2 minutes ago? And then they don't reach the sales goals that they had hoped, and then they can't product develop. Although at that time, they're getting a lot of interesting feedback from the community of the products that they should be doing.
Right.
But they're stuck with this, you know, inventory, so they can't sort of like act on it. And I learned that firsthand running a brand marketing agency, you know, working with a lot of these kind of brands. So intentionally with Ceremonia, we said, let's launch with a hero product that can easily be added to any existing routine.
Yeah.
So we're not asking someone to switch everything they love about their hair care journey.
Yeah.
We're simply asking them to add something that will enhance the hair quality. In Aceite de Mosca, it was our scalp remedy oil. It's still our bestseller. It's our hero product. It was the perfect product because it's a scalp remedy. Yeah. And most people don't have a scalp ritual yet, despite it being sort of like at the core of hair wellness. So it provided an opportunity for us to really talk about like the source of good hair beginning at the scalp. And it became a product that anyone could add to their existing routine. And then we knew that eventually shampoo and conditioner was going to be part of the pipeline, but no one is walking around without a shampoo and conditioner. Like everyone already has one. So in order for us to convince someone to switch out what they already have at home,
there
needs to be a level of trust. So we decided to launch with products that were very unique to us that we can build trust with. And then once we had that trust, we could upsell people to the more staples of sort of like everyday routine-ique products.
Got it. And then I guess, you know, looking forward, what are the factors that that you think about in product development? Is it, you know, you have a 2-year roadmap or is it more based on kind of customer feedback? Just curious, you know,
on that. Yeah, so it's kind of like a mix. It's a very, I feel like sometimes founders, you know, just have like, oh, I just felt so passionate about this one thing. I wanted to bring it to the world. We actually have a very data-driven approach to this. And like, not to be too sort of like, you know, statistical about it, but we look at what are the existing trends, like what are like overarching beauty trends, and then how do those translate into skincare, and how are they translating into hair care? And I actually find a lot of inspiration in skincare because they are years ahead of hair. So I look a lot at like, what are the things that have been picked up in skin that were maybe unheard of a couple of years ago, and which ones will be applicable to hair. We look at Google search traffic for specific ingredients. We look at gaps in the market for specific hair needs. And then we have an ongoing conversation with a community. We have a community panel of 250 people, who we're in touch with on a daily basis. And because we have an in-house chemist and lab, we're able to produce samples really quickly and send out to our community and get real-time feedback through the entire developing process. So yeah, it's kind of like a very sort of like 360 strategy for how we decide to bring something to the market. But there is also like a foundation to what we bring to the market, and it has to be rooted in our brand pillars. Like, we are all about hair wellness. You know, like, we would never launch something that purely has a sort of like a product that only serves to like mask your hair for the day. Like, that's not a ceremonia. When we launch styling products, even the styling products have nutritions and that sort of have a purpose beyond the styling of the day. And so that's an important pillar. And then we find our inspiration in the Latin culture. So all of our products also tap into natural ingredients from the Latin American region. And then we adhere to very strict clean standards. We are one of the few hair brands that are considered Credo clean. We are one of their top selling brands. And we really pride ourselves in pushing the boundaries for what high performing hair can be when it comes to clean.
Amazing. I love that. So, you know, you talked about this group of kind of insiders. How, you know, it sounds like you guys engage on product development, but I'm just curious, you know, how did you develop them, and you know, what purpose do they serve? Do they help you with kind of marketing? Are they more, you know, customer feedback? I'm curious about that.
Yeah. I mean, as the group grows, we're seeing that different people grow into different sort of like buckets of a community. Like, some have enabled themselves to become affiliates and sort of like brand reps. Some like to, you know, be part of product development purely. Some people actually are trying to build their own social followings, and they love to do content product with us where we would, you know, credit them back and so forth. Sure. So it's a very fluid relationship. And we're trying to create, you know, like different tiers and programs to funnel people into the flows that make sense for them. Mm-hmm. But initially it started honestly with just me tapping into like my Latina friends. Right. I just wanted to learn from them, you know, what is their relationship to beauty and how has that changed from the way they grew up versus, you know, the media impressions they got through teenage years to today. And that was a very powerful, initially was a lunch like IRL that was pre-COVID, and it kept growing. For each time we would meet, the previous people would have brought two friends, or, you know, then they brought friends, and it sort of grew very organically. And now it's also growing with our customer base. So that's sort of like how the group came about. And then we use this community for pre-access to products. So we get reviews when we launch by people that have actually tried them. We have them be part of product development so that we can make sure, you know, that they work. This is product that people want to buy. Which hair type do they work best for? And then we also tap into them for, you know, sort of like quick opinions. Like, if we're, you know, in between two designs, we're like, okay, guys, confidentially, like, which one do you like best? it's really fun.
That's awesome. I guess, you know, on the branding side, obviously you have a lot of experience on that front, you know, prior to starting Ceremonia. How did you think about developing the brand, you know, as we see it today? What was that process like? You know, from an aesthetic perspective, what was important to you?
Yeah. As someone who has been running a brand marketing agency and also has a significant following on Instagram, I have seen so much. Yeah. I get sent to me a lot of things, you know, both from founders who wanted to work with my agency or from brands that wanted me to, you know, engage with their brands. So I think it was pretty clear to me that we are in this time where everything looks the same. Like somehow everyone wanted to create a nicely packaged something. And nicely packaged somehow meant white. So in this like sea of beige, I wanted to bring to life something that would stand out and that would feel as elevated as something that is minimal and white, but with a more sort of like with a cultural flair. So I think the branding was something that was super important to us from the beginning. And we worked with this really amazing creative duo, Garrett and Elizabeth. They did Harry's, they did Flamingo. They have done so many cool brands. They did Caraway, the home cook brand. Yeah. And together with them, and sort of like my own and our creative director's strong input, I feel like we were able to really challenge each other. So the process was very collaborative, but all over Zoom while everyone was in lockdown. Yeah. So it was, you know, we had to like drop off samples outside of someone's door and then, you know, run out. And, you know, we had no contact, like physical contact. We could never touch and feel things together. But I'm really happy with where we landed. And I think that the main sort of a goal was to create something that felt different and that would stand out. And I think we achieved that with the bold colors.
Yeah.
But then still have this sense of modernism, which we achieved by having very sort of like bold and minimal or like bold and clean fonts.
Yeah.
And then when you open the packaging, we have patterns of ingredients inside. Mm-hmm. So that sort of like gives it a bit of a softer edge.
Yeah. No, I love the layering, you know, of it's not just a, you know, kind of black and white brand. There's, you know, different elements to it, which I think is so kind of chic and sophisticated. So, you know, you touched on this a little bit. You know, you were obviously pregnant, you know, as the brand was launching and also while you were fundraising. So I'm curious, you know, what was that experience like for you? Any advice, lessons learned? You know, I know a lot of our listeners are founders themselves and have dealt with different scenarios around that. So would love that perspective.
Yeah, it was a very vulnerable experience because it was also my first time fundraising. So I couldn't always tell if I was, you know, being met with greater skepticism because I was pregnant or not, or it was just, you know, you also can't just disregard all the feedback and say that, oh, it's because I'm a woman or it's because I'm pregnant. Like there was also feedback that was valid and we needed to do more homework, you know? But I think the biggest lesson learned there is that to really trust your gut. And I think like whenever you get a no from someone or an inappropriate comment, which I had plenty of, it's easy to get disencouraged. But I think what I learned is that I don't need everyone. I just need the right people to care. And in a way, I'm grateful that someone is showing their true colors now so that they don't come on board as an investor, because that's ultimately not the people you want on your cap table forever. So I sort of tried to like find the gratitude aspect in those hard moments. And then also I think there is a bit of a revenge energy in me that for every no I get, it's like another sort of like added fuel in me to be like, your loss. Yeah. So it also fuels my engine a little bit. And yeah, like channel that energy into something that, you know, will have a better impact for you.
Yes. No, that's such great advice. So, you know, I know, you have been also intentional about building your cap table. And again, you know, to reflect who you are, but also what you envision for the brand. What were you really looking for in your investors?
Yeah. So something that I really like spent so much time on was to find more women of color to be on the cap table, because for me, there is no doubt that Ceremonia is going to become huge. Like there is like no alternative. Like this is a very clear trajectory to how this becomes, you know, a category defining business. So I want more women of color to be part of that journey. Like I want Ceremonia's success to trickle down to a lot of other women of color succeeding with me. And that's where, you know, issuing stock options to my employee, you know, comes in, et cetera. But then when it comes to fundraising, damn, it's really hard to find, you know, women of color who are in a place in their career where they already have capital to, you know, allocate into high risk investments, which is angel investing. So yeah, I had to really, like, that was a very proactive, work. For me, I had to ask, I mean, I asked you and I asked many people, and then, you know, eventually you start to get, you know, introductions through introductions, and then people, when they hear your name for the third time from someone, they're like, well, I guess this is the person I should be meeting with, because everyone is telling me about this Baba who is doing something called Ceremonia. So eventually I will get the right meetings. And today I'm super proud of our like cap table. We have some incredible women founders, beauty veterans, and then obviously really prestigious VCs as well.
Yeah, amazing. So, you know, the 2% is really around highlighting stories of people who are working to improve diversity, you know, in the venture capital and tech ecosystem. From your vantage point, what do you think that it will take, you know, to get more parity in this field and in this ecosystem?
Yeah. I mean, I think that angel investing is a great, place where, if women bring more deal flow to each other, that's one way of accessing, wealth. Mm-hmm. And I definitely have a little circle, like actually Hannah Bronfman does a great job in this. Like she always, you know, sends me deals. I send her deals. Yeah. I do some angel investing myself on the side. And then the other parties being more flexible with check size, I would say, for, you know, women of color who might bring additional benefit to the cap table aside from the check. And I have certainly been lucky enough where some brands that I've been wanting to invest in, you know, maybe had a much higher minimum check size threshold, but then they made an exception so that I could come in at a lower check size. But then we also just need representation on the other side of the table. And that's where, you know, funds like Female Founders Fund come in. Having women who have seen success journeys that don't look like the traditional white male at Harvard is so important.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, like everyone, you know, loves to talk about how like, oh, VCs don't invest in women. It's terrible. But at the same time, I get it. Like as a VC, you're trying to replicate success. And if success has only looked in a certain way in the past, it's very easy to end up, you know, replicating that for the future if you're just looking to replicate success. Yeah. So I think we need investors who can see beyond that and who can sort of like understand what are the founder traits that tell you something about potential.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. That's such a great point. And something I think often, you know, people don't go beyond to get to that second layer of you know, what really matters. So I think really, really helpful. So we're going to move into our lightning round, and I'm going to ask you a few questions. Just answer with whatever comes to mind first. Let's start with what motivates you.
Like the idea of representation. Like I really feel like that's what, you know, gets me up every day. It's that if I can be that role for someone that I wish, you know, I could have had.
Yeah.
Like when I was fundraising, I would have loved to have had this other Latina business to point to and be like, we are the hair care of this.
Yeah.
Look at this, you know, those examples are so valuable. So that really motivates me to think about Sermonia potentially playing that role.
What's the best advice you've ever received?
The best advice is probably to ask myself, what's the worst thing that can happen? Because oftentimes when you articulate the worst thing, it's not that scary after all. And it's also very unlikely. I ask myself that all the time. I'm like, okay, what is it that I'm actually afraid of? Like, what is it that could actually happen that would be so terrifying?
Yeah.
And then when you, say it out loud, you're like, okay, I could manage that.
What's the most interesting marketing campaign you've been a part of?
I think our Hispanic Heritage Month campaign, and I don't even know if I can call it a marketing campaign because it wasn't tied to a specific product or anything. It was more so just like really a campaign to hone into our mission, which is to widen the perspective for what it means to be Latinx in the US today. Mm-hmm. There is still such a narrow view for who the Hispanic consumer is in the US. And through our Hispanic Heritage Month campaign, we showed that there's so much diversity within Latinx.
Yeah.
And that campaign went viral, and it was actually named by The Cut the best campaign for fall, amongst, you know, like Versace and like other insane brands. I think that's probably the proudest moment.
Fantastic. What is there anything you want to plug or anything you want to announce here?
We have some exciting launches. So we just launched our scalp scrub and hair mask, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like it's insane. It feels like a spa at home, and I can highly recommend. And then we have an exciting curl routine launching later this month that sort of brings a tool and a product to your home.
Amazing. And finally, where can our listeners find you online?
I guess I spend more time than I like to admit on Instagram. So you can find me on Instagram. I am at Baba, B-A-B-B-A.
Amazing. Well, it was wonderful to have you today. Thank you for taking the time. I know, you know, you're super busy, but really appreciate, you know, all the advice and the feedback, and we'll let you know when this episode goes live. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Anu. Thank you guys for having me. Such an honor. I love what you're doing with this podcast. I'm an avid listener myself, so very honored to be on it.
Thank you for tuning in to the 2% for today's episode featuring Baba Rivera. Baba's dedication to building the most celebrated Latinx brand in beauty is incredibly inspiring, and we could not be more proud to include Sermonia as a Female Founders Fund portfolio company. Stay in touch with us on Instagram at Female Founders Fund and on Twitter at FCubeVC. And for those of you building the next billion-dollar businesses, we'd love to hear from you. Send all pitch decks to pitches@femalefoundersfund.com and we'll be in touch. And finally, if you're interested in working at one of our 45-plus female-founded startups, explore our job opportunities at jobs.femalefoundersfund.com. Make sure to subscribe to the 2% on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you are listening. And stay tuned for our next episode with powerful women founding and funding the future. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes, or simply tell a friend about the show. That would help us out too. Until next time, I'm Anu Dugal, and this has been the 2%.